Arthur. It's Ryan Starr Jones from The Way We See It. Just calling to say hi. I don't think I've called you in a while. And I'm kind of driving down to Miami, so I've been doing this thing where after I listen to each show, I'm just calling the person to say hi. Loved the last episode. I'm looking forward to your political episodes because I really enjoy those. Because I myself am not a political person and don't really get into it very much. But I actually enjoy when I get to hear you talk about it, and then when I get to hear, you know, Archer talk about it and stuff like that. So keep up the great work. I just love your show. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hi, and welcome to Amron's Podcast, episode 105, for Friday, August 1st, 2008. Today's episode is another political discussion with Jason, but first, a special announcement. Jason and I have decided to do a monthly discussion of politics and current events, and that means that Jason will be the co-host for these episodes and not just a guest. So I'd like to start today by welcoming my co-host, Jason.
Hello, everybody. This is Jason from Washington, D.C. You can see me on Jason's View from dc.blogspot.com. And I'm looking forward to this. I think this should be a fun bunch of discussions because this is what we used to do in the olden days.
Which are getting
when we were young.
Which yes. Is a long time ago.
Yes. Last century.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, let's not go over there. Well, one of the things we've decided is that these podcasts won't be necessarily just about politics or electoral politics specifically, although obviously in the short run there will probably be a lot of that. But we're going to talk about things going on in the news, and not necessarily just in the U.S., but also in other parts of the world, too. What else were we going to talk about? I can't remember.
Oh, there's your memory again. You are reaching that big moment, aren't you?
Yes, indeed.
Well, I think we're going to talk about, as you like to put it, Obama's rainbow tour. That's one of our discussions for today, and then some odds and ends. We'll
wing it,
blow it in, and see how it goes. Since this is our first time,
which actually reminds me, if there's anything that any of you would like to hear us talk about, you can send an email to me at arthur@amrenspodcast.com, or you can always leave a comment at the site as well. And we're planning on doing these political podcasts or current events podcasts or whatever you call it, generally the last Friday of the month. So the next one is tentatively scheduled to be posted on Friday, August 29th, New Zealand time, which would be obviously the day before in the U.S. But check out the website for updates and to see when the next episode is due. Well, since you mentioned it, why don't we start with the Rainbow Tour? I keep calling it that. Well, it's a long story, but anyway, what we're talking about is Obama's tour to the Mideast and Europe. And one of the things that struck me about that was McCain kept going on and on and on about how Obama had no foreign policy experience, he'd never even been to Iraq, and on, and then he goes and he says, what did he do that for? It's just politicking and grandstanding. I thought that was absurd.
Well, I thought, I really have to say that I was waiting for him to go, Marsha, Marsha, Marsha! I mean, there was this one point, it's just like, oh my God, you said he hasn't been there. He goes there, you get pissed off. And then you bitch about the press coverage. You bitch about the press coverage.
Yeah.
It was pathetic. I mean, it was pathetic. And I think he had ND because they're not going to be 250,000 people turning out anywhere for John McCain, let alone in some foreign capital.
Yeah.
I thought it was... I thought Obama did very well. It couldn't have gone any better. If there'd been a gaffe, John McCain would have loved the fact that the press would have been there, and it would have been played over a billion times on YouTube.
Yeah,
so I think
I was going to say the only thing that McCain's people really tried to pick on was that Obama ended up not going to visit wounded soldiers in Germany, and he said, "Oh, the reason they wouldn't do it is because they wouldn't allow cameras." Where it was far more complicated than that, of course.
Right.
The sort of thing that you can't get across really in a, a soundbite or whatever. But it seemed like, to me, by criticizing just that one thing alone, that they were really grasping at straws because there was nothing substantive that they could attack. He didn't say or do anything that was wrong.
Well, the only thing that I think is a little problematic is he's talking about, oh, you know, he wouldn't have voted for the surge, and it really didn't work, and that was sort of problematic, I thought. Otherwise, I think it went off very, very well, and what was, I think, interesting is a problem that McCain has in trying to criticize Obama, you know, about Iraq, is he's turning, Obama turns around and says, we need to get out of Iraq so that we can redeploy into Afghanistan.
Mm.
And so this notion of, oh, well, he's soft on terrorism. Well, no, not if you sort of then pivot and say, we're doing this so that we can go after where the real problems are, where the real menace of terrorist threats to our countries are actually, our country is actually located. And Afghanistan has really gone to hell in a handbasket. Mm. I mean, they had in, I believe, June, they had one less casualty, American casualty, than they had in Iraq. Only there are four times the number of soldiers in Iraq than there are in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So I think that's very, very telling. And it seems to me it's problematic, like I said, for McCain to try and come along and criticize him. And the rest of the trip was, you know, was great. It was great pictures. You know, there were all those people in Berlin. And as, you know, one of the commentators said, Americans like to be liked.
Yeah.
And that made him, you know, there is a, hey, this guy's going to be liked. And it looked very presidential, and it looks very presidential when, you know, in the course of going to Berlin, great spot to pick, that the two other people who happened to be presidents and who made important speeches there were John F. Kennedy and Ronald Reagan.
Mm. One of the things that annoyed me a bit about the coverage that I saw in the American news was this almost provincial attitude of a lot of the whiners who were complaining about the tour, and then, oh, basically it sounded like they're saying, oh, well, what do we care what Europeans think? Well, there's some of our oldest allies are in Europe, and Europe is an important player in world politics and could be a more important player if they were engaged instead of preached to like the current administration does.
Well, and if we're going to go after the Taliban and friends in Afghanistan, NATO is an important segment.
Absolutely.
Of that,
yeah.
of making up those forces. So, you know, having sort of a positive relationship or, you know, positive notion of the country, I think would make it easier to sell the notion of here's a place where we've got to go and we have to have more troops so that we can prevent these people from reconstituting the terrorist state.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the one thing that is a slight subtlety that's sometimes lost in the media is that there is, in ordinary people's minds, a difference between the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan. Now, to those in the further ends of the left, there is no difference. I suppose furthest ends of the right, too. But the people who are so adamantly opposed to Iraq are not necessarily opposed to Afghanistan.
No.
Because they can see that there's something relevant in that. But one of the things that McCain was complaining, or his people were complaining about, was the media bias. They kept going on about this liberal bias in the media. And, of course, the conservatives always complain about a liberal bias, and there's no evidence that that exists. But what they were saying was the evidence was that all the major networks were sending their anchors over with Obama on the tour, whereas they didn't do that the last time McCain went, for instance. And, of course, the first thing I thought to myself was, yeah, but McCain's done it several times, so it's not news anymore. But the other thing is that it seems to me what's going on here is that the media has a bias towards what sells. And what sells is Obama. And, I mean, you look at some of the major news magazines, they put Obama's picture on the cover and they sell more copies than they ordinarily do. And the same thing happens with news stories and also ratings for the news networks. They cover this stuff because it's what their research tells them and what the ratings and circulation figures show people want. So it's not so much a liberal bias, it's a marketing bias.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I'm sorry, who's more exciting, Barack Obama or John McCain?
Hmm.
You know, that's a pretty easy one. And it's maybe the nightly news is more news, but a lot of the stuff is like on the Today Show or Good Morning America or whatever, CBS This Morning or whatever it's called, and it's packaged, it's infotainment.
Yeah.
And it is very much, you know, ratings driven, and it was extremely important because he was going as the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party to be candidate for the President of the United States. So it was very, very different. And McCain has been over there on, you know, many occasions, and they're going to whine because they're going to whine, you know. So that's sort of their rote, you know, the terrible liberal bias. It's if they had as much power as they really said they would, then Republicans would never be elected to office, would they?
Yeah.
You know, John Kerry would be, well, no, this would be the end of Al Gore's second term.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, I mean, I've said before that if you look at a simple content analysis, you don't have to do it scientifically. You can, up until recently, certainly up until at least 2006, more often than not, the mainstream American media parroted whatever it is the Bush administration said. They didn't question them about much of anything, really. There were a few news sources that did, but by and large, the media marched in lockstep with the Bush-Cheney regime. And if there is a liberal bias, I'd certainly like to see evidence of it.
Well,
and I haven't ever seen any, because all of the talking heads, even on CNN, the ones who are supposedly Democrats, lean far to the right, more often than not, by Democratic standards, not by Republican standards, certainly. I personally haven't seen any evidence of liberal bias, because I'm a liberal, and I don't see my views reflected in the mainstream American media.
Well, MSNBC sort of has some left-wing, or...
True, but I'm wondering how mainstream that is. I mean, when I'm thinking mainstream, I'm thinking of the ones that have the greatest reach, like ABC, NBC, CBS, probably CNN still. Fox Noise, I guess.
If you only have a couple million people watching, yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, so I don't really think that there's that much of a liberal bias. And the thing that I think that the McCain campaign has to be careful of now is that they're sounding more desperate than anything, that they're sounding like chronic whingers and moaners when they're getting off message. And I can imagine how frustrating it must be for them, but if they're not doing themselves any favors, that's for sure.
Well, what message?
Well, yeah, more of the same. If you like Bush, you'll love McCain. That's the message.
Well, I don't even think if that's the case, then that's not particularly well articulated either. There has to be some sort of a separation, and I think it's going to be hard to do.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of tours, you had someone touring down in your neck of the woods, from what I understand.
Yes, indeed. Condoleezza Rice was here just recently over the weekend. Unfortunately, while the subtropical depression was lashing the North Island, she had come by way of Australia. She went to Perth, which I gather is the hometown of Australia's foreign minister, and was there, and then eventually arrived here. And she had private meetings with our foreign minister, Winston Peters, and then eventually with the prime minister, Helen Clark, and the leader of the opposition, John Key, which is standard procedure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And but what was interesting about her time in New Zealand is, because, as you know, the U.S. and New Zealand have been regarded as friends for a very long time, because in the 1980s, New Zealand went nuclear-free and banned nuclear-powered mm-hmm. and nuclear-armed ships, and the U.S. responded by suspending its defense obligations, as they called it, under the ANZUS Alliance, which is Australia, New Zealand, and the U.S., and ever since then, New Zealand has not been considered an ally of the United States.
Right.
New Zealand cannot participate in defense maneuvers with the U.S. So what's been happening is that Australia engages in training with the U.S., like they just recently tested a torpedo off of Hawaii somewhere. And New Zealand trains with Australia, and somehow that's supposed to make everybody all, I don't know, ready for warfare. Well, yeah. And when Colin Powell was Secretary of State, he described New Zealand as a very, 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 very good friend, and that's as far as it went. Well, things have been thawing in recent years, and when Condoleezza Rice was here in New Zealand over the weekend, she referred to New Zealand as an ally, and it's been the first time in years, a very long time, mm-hmm. probably the better part of 25 years, that the United States has referred to New Zealand as an ally. And what's changed a lot of that is, first of all, New Zealand is in Afghanistan at this moment. And also, New Zealand has been engaged in peacekeeping efforts throughout the Pacific, trying to foster democracy and also to in actual peacekeeping missions, say, to the Solomon Islands, for instance. And New Zealand has been pushing hard to try to restore democracy to Fiji, which is under a military dictatorship at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the reasons why Condoleezza Rice was here is she and Winston flew on to Samoa for a meeting of Pacific leaders to try and move the process towards democracy along in Fiji, among other things. Because the U.S. has come to realize the importance of the Pacific for its strategic security, particularly right. with the world's largest Islamic nation, Indonesia, located in right. our neck of the woods. So because the Pacific is so important to the United States' strategic interests, then therefore New Zealand is one of the powers in the Pacific, becomes important as well. So
right.
I don't know, I just think it was all very interesting that all of a sudden the U.S. has started to look more favorably on New Zealand. And I mean, I'm always reluctant to give any credit whatsoever to the Bush-Cheney regime, as you know. But I suspect that in this
case,
it's true.
I'm shocked.
But I think in this case, some credit is warranted, although I suspect it's mostly with Condoleezza Rice herself. She's a very strong woman, as you know.
Yeah, this is legacy time. You know,
yeah.
we're down for the wire. You're down to your last, you know, 9 months or however long it is, and this is legacy time. And you start looking at things a whole lot differently when you realize you don't have a year or two or three. You've got 6 months. So
yeah,
that makes a big difference.
Yeah. But speaking of Condoleezza Rice, she's actually one of the people who continues to be mentioned as a possible running mate for John McCain. And I should actually mention that Roger Green had asked us to talk specifically about the vice presidential candidates.
Right.
And I personally don't see McCain picking Condoleezza Rice. Do you?
Here, let's make a break with the Bush administration by picking the Secretary of State of that administration, who an advocate of the most unpopular war we've ever engaged in, and put her in the second spot. There's a good idea.
Yeah.
Why not pick a serial killer? You know, I don't see how that happens. I was watching, speaking of Talking Heads, one of the shows, and I don't really remember the phrase that the woman used because it was quite interesting, but it was essentially like the notion of John McCain is very old, stale white bread, and he really needs something to spice the sandwich up. This is my interpretation of it, and she certainly would, but the baggage is just huge.
Yeah. Well, what about some of the other people that have been mentioned for McCain? There's Charlie Crist from Florida still, and Paulenty, or however you pronounce it, from Minnesota as well, both of which the media keeps calling battleground states.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. Senator Crist, or governor, is he governor?
Yeah.
Governor, sorry. He got married.
Is he married yet?
I think he got married recently. I think that's what it was.
And it's certainly engaged, anyway.
Yeah. I find it interesting, you know, the speculation about the vice president's, the spot on both sides. And I'm not really sure how much pull that position has anymore.
Mm.
I sort of hearken, you know, remember back to the days that, you know, Kennedy picked Johnson and Johnson delivered Texas to Kennedy. I don't know that anybody has that much power anymore to guarantee I'm going to bring you this state.
Yeah.
Now, certainly there are, you know, you balance the ticket, you know, the experience factor, the age factor, which obviously has to be considered under with McCain, but I just don't think that type of power is there anymore. Now, does it make things interesting? Yeah. You know, they could, Obama, there was talk about either the governor of Virginia or one of the, you know, the Jim Webb was a senator from Virginia. I don't, you know, think that one is realistically being considered. But that, again, could throw the, you know, something into the dynamics of the race. Certainly, Florida is hugely important. It's very, very, very big prize. I don't know so much about Minnesota, but if you're going to be fighting over, you know, Arizona and New Mexico and Colorado, then I guess every electoral vote does count. I think it's
very close. I think the Republicans are counting on it being a close election in terms of the electoral vote anyway. But if I were McCain, I can see why I would be leaning towards picking Crist, because Florida is a much bigger state, electorally speaking, than mm-hmm. Minnesota or some of these other states they're talking about. If you're talking about mobilizing his base, actually, Charlie Crist wouldn't do a good job of mobilizing his base either, but I wouldn't have thought that picking a governor from a northern state would have helped him at all with his base, because I can't think of any prominent Republicans who could do it, except not even Rudy Giuliani anymore, because he crashed and burned so badly in the primaries.
Oh, there's no way he could do that. There's just no way he could do that, because that's someone who is essentially pro-choice. Giuliani's record on gay rights, no, there's no way. I think a thing working against Crist is the fact that you might want him to stay in Florida and organize Florida from Florida.
Yeah.
You know, and just concentrate on that state. I think he has a real tough time, McCain, because he's got to pick somebody who is somewhat dynamic, obviously younger, which is pretty easy anyway. But
not too young. I think you can't be too much younger.
Well, yes. Yeah, and you can't have somebody who outshines him.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, and where do you go? And is it going to be another white guy?
Yeah.
You know, they had this governor from Louisiana, Bobby
Jindal, or whatever it is.
I'm not exactly sure how to, who is Indian American, as in from the subcontinent and not a Native American, who could be a good choice, but having, you know, sort of done a little Google search on him, he is not much more experienced than Obama is. So.
Yeah.
If you're going to make experience a factor here, you're going to have somebody who's coming along who doesn't really have that much experience.
Yeah.
So I think that doesn't work out really well. And Romney's name keeps popping up, but I just don't see that. I just don't see that, because he's a Mormon.
Base at all to McCain's base.
No, I think
actually,
that would.
I think a lot of what goes on with this speculation process is, part of it is the candidate is trying to say how open-minded they are and forward-thinking by thinking outside the square for all of these people, even though most of them have no chance of getting in. For instance, Obama, just recently the AP was reporting that Obama was considering several Republicans, including Ann Veneman, who was Bush's first Secretary of State. Secretary of Agriculture.
Now, if he could get him, now there would be a ticket. Whoa.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, that's simply not going to happen. Her name's Ann Veneman, and that's simply not going to happen because the Democrats despised her. She was all in favor of farming subsidies to corporate farming and against farming subsidies to small farms, family farms. And like the rest of the Bush-Cheney regime, I'm adamantly opposed to regulation and all sorts of problems with her, with the Democratic base.
She doesn't bring anything. If you're going to pick a Republican, pick Chuck Hagel.
Yeah.
I mean, there's somebody with foreign policy experience.
Yeah. He's on the tour with Obama.
Right. And position on the Iraq war, who sort of changed over time. He could be strong. That would be, you know, whether or not Hagel would do it, of course, is another matter. But that would be huge. That would certainly throw a monkey wrench into
Because you look at it and you can see that it's sort of a Republican dissident, but he does come from a state that's not that important, electorally speaking, in terms of the electoral votes. But the fact that it's so unusual would probably capture people's imagination.
Well, yes, but you could also call him, he's a Republican maverick.
Yeah.
Where
have we heard that before?
Doesn't that sound vaguely familiar? So that's, again, I think Obama has, I think he has a bigger field from which to pick from to begin with.
Yeah.
But he has a lot more choices. You know, there's another name that they floated for McCain was Tom Ridge, who was the former governor of Pennsylvania. And, oh, my God, if you're talking about and here's the cure for insomnia, John McCain and Tom Ridge. Snoozeville. You get more dynamism watching spaghetti cook or something. I don't know. There was just like, he's got to have somebody. McCain has to have somebody. McCain does very well in sort of these town hall meeting type things. He needs somebody who can sort of give a speech,
yeah.
who can sort of do not match Obama, because I don't think anybody can match Obama, but like that.
Yeah.
And he's got a harder row to hoe.
Yeah.
It's just no question about it.
Yeah, particularly because he doesn't, McCain doesn't have the depth to choose from. Although,
no.
I'm sure some Republicans would disagree with me on that, but I mean, in realistic terms.
Yes. Yeah. And there's also a lot of speculation about it because it's July and it's a slow news time in Washington.
Yeah.
Congress is not here. And that's not entirely true. I guess they are holding some hearings. I guess they're going to go away fairly soon for their Labor Day, probably recess, which will start sometime in August, because they have had some, they are having some hearings in the next couple of weeks on some topics, and they love to do it, you know. So politically speaking, you know, the campaign really hasn't ramped up, and it's just like, oh, let's all speculate.
Yeah. And part of it, too, of course, is that we're in the final 100 days of the campaign, and so people are saying, well, okay, now we're getting towards the business end here, although the conventions aren't until the end of summer. Northern Hemisphere summer, I should add. But there's also speculation that they just won't be able to hold off because of that, because the conventions are so late that they're going to have to say who their running mate is so they can start campaigning together. And I think there might be a bit of truth in that.
If that's the case, the Olympics start August 8th. I don't really see someone announcing, either of them, oh, here's who I'm picking as my vice president, when people are going to be watching to see if Michael Phelps is going to win a gold medal.
Yeah.
I think that's just going to drown out, and they're going to go, oh yeah, that happened during the Olympics. I really...
That's a good point.
You want it, when you make the announcement, that's what you want it all to be about, you.
Yeah.
And who you're picking. Some disaster could happen, which you have absolutely no control over, but you certainly know when the Olympics are going to be.
Yeah.
And that just seems nuts. Of course, then you don't have much time after that before the convention starts, although I don't think the Republicans are until September, isn't it?
I'd have to double-check the date, but I believe you are correct. The Dems are August 25 to 28, and the GOP is September 1 to 4. So that means that it's after the Olympics, both of them.
Yeah.
So, essentially, if they don't announce their running mate in the next day or two, that's
after
the Olympics.
Well, you've got like 10 days. Mm. Not quite 10 days. About 10 days. I don't see... That would just be foolish. That would just be really bad marketing. Really bad. It would be a bad way to launch something,
yeah.
It seems to me.
Yeah.
Since NBC is going to have like 12 million hours of coverage.
Yeah.
And they don't, you usually don't have something this early anyway. And this whole notion of, they need to change the dynamic. And I really don't think people start concentrating on the election until after Labor Day. I really don't think that happens.
Yeah.
You know, it has started earlier. You've seen ads. Both Obama and McCain are running ads now, which I can't recall them ever being this early.
Yeah.
But I think it's just noise. You know.
Yeah,
and
the thing too is that if they don't announce somebody, that'll keep the speculation going and people talking about them for weeks potentially. So there's another advantage to not naming somebody yet for both of them.
Yes, very true.
Well, in other political issues, you wanted to talk about a couple things from the Justice Department, or about the Justice Department.
Well, it's very interesting. They're doing these investigations into the wonderful tenure of Roberto Gonzalez and friends, and they have had yet another investigative report, which is from the Office of Inspector General and Office of Professional Responsibility. This is the GAO. Justice Office of Inspector General and Office of Professional professional responsibility. Boy, there's a mouthful. And anyway, this is about essentially his, Gonzalez's two lieutenants, this woman, Monica Goodling, and Kyle Sampson, his then chief of staff. And essentially what they did was to hire non-political jobs politically.
Hmm.
This just speaks volumes about them. The report found that in one instance, Goodling objected to hiring an assistant prosecutor in Washington because, judging from his resume, he appeared to be a liberal Democrat. In another, she rejected an experienced terror prosecutor to work on counterterrorism issues at a Justice Department headquarters because of his wife's political affiliations, and then proceeded to hire somebody who didn't have any terrorism experience. And it also said she rejected at least one job applicant who was rumored to be a lesbian.
Hmm.
And I think this just really goes to the lengths that the Bush administration went to essentially politicize as many of the departments as possible. And and of course, his thing is like, oh, well, I didn't, Gonzalez's thing is that, of course, I didn't know this was going on. And Goodling's sort of thing is like, well, you know, I was just sort of following orders.
Yeah.
And I think...
Where have we heard that before?
Yeah, and what has that been used to
A lot of this sort of stuff has come out before as well. There was a report not too long ago about how the Bush-Cheney Justice Department had been screening interns based on ideological litmus tests, primarily looking for fundamentalist Christians, but also basically anybody who wasn't a Democrat.
And can I interject? I mean, you can... It's completely wrong for what they did for the sort of the career positions, but at least you can sort of understand it. Interns?
Yeah.
They did it to interns?
Yeah, for no good reason.
I mean, talk about paranoia or control freaks. I mean, I read that and I just went, that's just nuts. They're there for 3 months out of the year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sort of the flip side of this, what a waste of our time when you could actually be doing something that might be constructive. Like, I don't know, going after the bad guys.
Yeah, well, it's been shown how politically corrupt the Justice Department was or has been. And I don't know how much has changed, so it may still be for all I know. But even things like anti-crime grants being given first and foremost to people with who are politically connected to the White House, or who had strong fundamentalist Christian credentials, and other grants were not given to proven and effective organizations, particularly with an eye toward reducing youth crime, but not exclusively. Instead, there was clearly an ideological litmus test in order to get a grant from the Justice Department during this time. And
who would ever have thought that I would ever say that John Ashcroft looks like a paragon of virtue in comparison now?
Yeah.
I mean, because as far as I can tell, none of this stuff happened when he was around.
I certainly haven't seen any allegations yet that it did. It seems to have happened after he left. And I always thought it was curious that he suddenly abruptly left. And I've always felt that the reason he left, and I have no proof of this, was that he felt that the wiretaps and so on that the Bush administration wanted to do were clearly illegal and unconstitutional, and he didn't want a bar of it. And when he left, Bush Cheney put Gonzalez in, who they knew would do whatever was asked of him. But I could be wrong about that. Maybe he was in the thick of it. He just said recently that when Gonzalez and the other guys, I can't remember the names, came to visit him in the hospital, it wasn't hard for him to stand up to them and say no, implying that it implied that he was strongly against the illegal wiretaps.
Right.
And that certainly would explain why he abruptly left and has stayed quiet.
Well, yeah, and maybe recovering from surgery, fairly major surgery, wasn't his, like, his appendix or his gallbladder or something
like that,
you know, come knocking on your door and say, here, sign this. Maybe, I don't know, I think if it was me, I'd be a little pissed off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, make no mistake, I still to this day think that John Ashcroft is a fascist creep. but I do think he at least had some integrity about him, which is more than you can say for most of the people in the Bush-Cheney regime.
Oh, yeah, it's just very, very sad, you know, and what they've done and how they've screwed up the department. I mean, well, this one among the many things at some point in time, we'll have to go over what they've done to the armed forces of this country, but that's a,
yeah, and also,
that's a discussion in and of itself.
Oh, it is. But related to that, BBC's Panorama recently had a discussion of the war profiteers, like Halliburton, KBR, and so on, who have made billions of dollars, very often in no-bid contracts. What I've been wondering lately is, in the fullness of time, do you think there will be criminal investigations into the profiteering and corruption in the Bush-Cheney regime, and will anybody ever go to prison for what's been done? I don't think
so. I think it will come out.
This stuff
always does. You know, it's one of the things that I always find quite amusing is this notion of how the government was involved in killing Kennedy, and I'm thinking, it's the federal government. They can't keep a secret. What are you talking about? They're going to keep something secret for 40 years? You're nuts.
Yeah.
45. So I think some of it will come out. I doubt that anyone will go to jail.
Nobody important, anyway.
But it will probably change the way things are done. And I would certainly think that the Republicans, who I think are going to be in the wilderness for a while because of George, will think twice about just rubber stamping everything.
Yeah.
They're getting left holding in the bag. There was this rather funny article in the Post style section about sort of the young Republicans meeting at some bar and lamenting the status of the GOP and how they're going to be out in the wilderness probably after this election. Aww. and it was, you know, mainly white males, and somebody in the comments says, well, doesn't that tell you something about why they're in the wilderness? So, and Bush has certainly helped to put them there.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly right. I mean, I would love to see some of these people end up in prison. I mean, obviously, I would love to see Dick Cheney finish out his days in a federal prison somewhere, but I just don't see it happening. Much as I'd love to see it, I don't see it happening, which is unfortunate, but as long as the full story comes out eventually, I think that would really help quite a lot. But some of it will depend on who becomes president. If it's John McCain, nothing will change. Nothing significant anyway, but I mean, at least with Obama, there's a chance that things might improve.
Well, I think things will improve. I think things will be different under McCain as well, because some of this crap he's just not going to allow. But also, I think once Bush is gone, they're not going to be in a position of power anymore. People are going to go after it. There's going to be all sorts of stuff, because there is all sorts of stuff to go after. You know, the Clintons couldn't keep Tupperware properly closed, let alone keep a secret. So all of that came out during their administrations. But there's just tons of stuff to go after now. I mean, you know, come February 1st, 2009 or beforehand. And I would assume that there's going to be lots of stuff that will come out. Bush always says, oh, you know, history will write that I'm, you know, I was right in what I did. And I think at least in the short term, there's going to be a lot of mud flung.
Yeah, well, history is always written by the victors, as they say.
Well, yes, that's true.
We'll see what happens with that, I guess. But we should probably start wrapping up. And rather than leave it all on a totally serious note, I thought that I would just bring up one little thing.
You're bringing a Pula girl from Hawaii.
Uh-huh. Part of the reason why I wanted to mention it is because it was on Yahoo News, which means it was probably picked up by AP and distributed God only knows where else. And I wouldn't want people to think that this is a normal turn of events in New Zealand, but there was...
It was on my Earthlink homepage.
Oh, really? Oh, how nice.
Yes, link.
There was a girl whose parents named her Tallulah Dzahula from Hawaii. Now, giving a kid an unusual name is not often by itself considered child abuse, unless it opens up the child to ridicule and abuse and bullying and things like that. And then the parents could actually come to the attention of the authorities for doing that. Well, a family court judge decided that the girl would be put under court guardianship so her name could be changed, because she said she was so embarrassed she never told anybody what her name was. And the fact that some children have, that they've tried to give children some unusual names. Like one was named Number 16 Bus Shelter. Another was called Violence, and two twins were named Benson and Hedges. And
I guess my question is, how old are these children, and why have they not, all the kids not getting together and killed their parents? I'm sorry, it's just like, yeah, well.
The parents clearly are not good parents to name kids like that, obviously.
No.
I think we can all agree on that. But the legislation, what names in New Zealand, births, deaths, and marriages and all that kind of stuff are regulated by a department called the Department of Internal Affairs. And there are certain criteria for naming a child. A name must not cause offense to a reasonable person, which means that you can't use swear words or racist terms or things like that. They can't be unreasonably long, so they have to be less than 100 characters, including spaces, which is more of an issue for Maori names in particular, because very often they can be quite long.
Right. Well, I okay, names. Is this like somebody's whole name? You know, like Fred Allen Smith, or, you know.
I presume so.
Or is it their first name? So it's the whole name. Okay.
The whole name, I think.
Trying to figure out what that is.
And part of that, I think, is because a lot of official forms only have space for so many characters.
Yes, that could do it as well. Yes, that could definitely do it.
Yeah. But so, let's see, what else? The names also must not, without adequate justification, be, include, or resemble an official title or rank, like Sir or Dame or Excellency or something like that, which is fair enough.
Princess? You couldn't name somebody Princess?
You might be able to get away with that. I don't know. I doubt it, because we are a monarchy after all. But I don't think so.
Because I've known someone in my life whose name is Princess.
Yeah, I can imagine that one day that might be permissible, but I wouldn't think so at the moment.
Now, I'm wondering if that was actually her name or if that was a nickname. I'd say I don't remember.
Yeah, Princess is
anyway.
The name you give a dog or a cat, isn't it?
No.
That's true. I mean, I wouldn't, but I have perfectly respectable names for animals like Jake. And then there's Sam. Perfectly respectable names.
Yes, very good names.
Yes, solid names. Yeah, I just thought it was, I have to admit that I thought the story was hysterical when I heard it, because Tallulah does the hula from Hawaii.
Well, what was interesting about it was that the first time I saw it twice, and the second time when I saw it on the Earthlink homepage, I actually read it, and I thought it was something from The Onion.
It sounds like it would be.
And in fact, was sort of, the Post home website sometimes has stuff from The Onion, and I think this was next to it, and I just assumed, oh, well, this is just some silly thing they made up, and then I actually saw it on the Earthlink thing, and thinking, why are they posting stuff from, and I went, oh my God, it's an actual story, so.
Yes.
And if this doesn't prove people are crazy, nothing will.
But I just thought I would bring that up, because it is a sort of a current events thing that doesn't involve politics in any manner, shape, or form.
That's very true. And on that let me see if I can enunciate here. On that uplifting note, we should probably sign off for now.
We will indeed. And the next episode, as I said earlier, is due to be posted on Friday, August 29th, New Zealand time. Check your local listings for time and station.
Send comments, questions, concerns, or funny stories that you might want us to read for our next podcast.
Yep, you can always email me at arthur@amarinspodcast.com. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the site, amarinspodcast.com, where all previous episodes of the Amarins Podcast are also available, including all of our previous political discussions. Maybe I'll put a page on there just for the political ones. Make it easier
that
for
would
people
be good.
To find.
That would be good.
I've got a page that's sitting there doing nothing at the moment.
That's true.
Okay, well, we'll be back next month.
Bye for now.
Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amarins Podcast at amarinspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at arthur@amarinspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. listener line on 206-339-8413. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website. I do trip over my words sometimes. Thank God I can edit.
Yes.